Hello and welcome to this week's Next Sense Institute podcast. My name's Trudy Smith. I'm the manager of continuing professional education at the Next Sense Institute and your podcast host. We're continuing, this will be our final discussion about advocacy. We've been talking all year about it. I wanted to finish with someone fabulous, and we have that person in Jeremy Pang. So welcome, Jeremy. It's lovely to have you with us. Could you please introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pleasure to be invited, Trudy. Thank you for the invite. So hi, everyone. My name is Jeremy and my pronouns are she, her. And today I'm joining you from the lands of the Wallumattagal people here on Darug country. And I wish to pay my respects to elders past and present. And I extend that respect to the traditional custodians of the lands from wherever you're tuning into this podcast. So to continue my introduction, I am a deaf adult and I wear two hearing aids, and I've done so since I was 6 years old, but I've never consistently worn them growing up. I think that's a good thing to be upfront about. I do have progressive hearing loss of a permanent nature, so now I definitely need to wear them pretty much all waking hours. Who else am I? I'm a mother to three boisterous children, one of whom also wears two hearing aids. And professionally, I am a clinical audiologist by training. And prior to working in ear and hearing health research, I worked in a diagnostic balance clinic for the first 9 years after I graduated. And now I work at the National Acoustic Laboratories as a research audiologist. And I'm also working my way through a part-time research degree at the University of Queensland. So all up, it's been a real privilege being all of those things and having this space and platform to enable me to do those things.
Yeah. Amazing. And it's all such extraordinary work that you do. So we're thrilled to have you with us today. So I'm curious, the question I've been asking everyone is to find out some experiences you've had as an advocate for yourself, whether that's personally, professionally, whatever you'd like to share with us.
Yeah. Thank you. I think that's that question's a real reflective moment. I think it hasn't always been something I chose to do. And advocacy didn't even ping on my radar until recently. And that's me being a bit more, I think, mature. Growing up has certainly given me more confidence to ask and push and pull for things and just to not accept mediocrity, right? Because life is too short, frankly. Part of the catalyst is being the progressive nature of this hearing loss. And as I age, like anytime there's a meeting or a conference or an event, I would be asking for access to captioning, better access to sound. And sometimes that's requesting for specific seats at a venue or, you know, picking up a receiver from the venue staff so I can use the telecoil. And fortunately, the work that I do and the place where I work, I am working with a bunch of very switched on folks. Like, they are caring, supportive, and on top of that, we all work in hearing health sector, which means that we're generally more woke, I guess, than the average person. And that's to say that heightened awareness around making things accessible is always on the top of our minds. And I think the more I think about it, when I advocate on behalf of others, I'm doing it for myself as well. That's doing it for the versions of me when I was that 6-year-old child wearing hearing aids for the first time, or the shy 14-year-old high schooler, or the awkward 25-year-old coming into work and not wanting to show people I have hearing loss, but I work with people who have hearing differences. And I needed to wear my hearing aids more and more full time, and as a, you know, a 40-something-year-old mum of a child with a hearing difference, I need to be that person they need to see growing up. And I think at those younger ages, I don't see my hearing difference could be a superpower. And that's the thing about advocacy. The more you do it, the more empowering it is, and people can see that, and it's really sparkly and shiny. Self-advocacy, I think for me, is really, you know, all these big things that you see that are headline things, but also the small acts. And I think it's a small act that you do practice that snowball eventually. And the bias I used to have as a younger person around the word advocacy is this image of a loud, outspoken individual wearing a very heavily tattooed heart on their sleeves, right? And this picture of people wearing these big sandwich boards spruiking their campaign and their motto. But what's become clearer over time is that advocacy can be very gentle, mm-hmm. but strong at the same time. It's modeling those small things and asking assertively sometimes the conditions and things that you want to see happen to make it fair, right? And it's about living more fully and challenging perceptions and biases that we are often ingrained with. And it's just asking questions of ourselves and of others. Why do things have to be the way they are? And why can't they be any other way to make it easier for us all? And just not accepting the minimum, I think it's the motivation. And just being very unapologetically authentic and really be okay with that. Yeah, and I think being a parent of a young child with hearing difference mean that you can feel a bit pushier because you want that. You desperately want that for your tribe of parents and other young kids with hearing difference. And yeah, I think self-advocacy hadn't always come naturally is the short answer.
Sure. Yeah. There's so many things that I want to unpack in what you've just said, and it's so. I was laughing about this, being woke, and it's so. I feel like, you know, being woke is really saying, why do things have to, as you said, why do things have to stay the same? If you know better, then you do better.
And absolutely.
I think as you say, it's, you know, you can be what you can see, which is what you're now doing for your daughter, which is incredibly important too, and really sort of just challenging those norms and through both your own life and just making things better gradually.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more you do it, the more people can resonate with that, whether or not they have lived experience of deafness or not. Mm. And I think when you voice these things that people nod their heads to and say, yeah, I haven't stopped to think about that, you become a bit more bold and you feel less alone. And I think sharing what you want, what you need, other people will feel a bit braver to do the same. I think it's a wonderful warm fuzzy feeling when you can hit some chords with people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we've been touching on this already in your first response, but experiences of advocating for the deaf and hard of hearing community, do you have any specific examples of where you've managed to move a mountain or just make changes for the community in a positive way?
Yeah, that's moving mountains. I'd love to say that I am part of that movement. however, I will be a bit more humble than that. And I think it's a great question because of the multiple hats and perspectives that have come in. And I think depending on which hat that I've got on, I would advocate slightly differently, but with always the same goal in mind, which is to make deafness, on everyone's mind and just being mindful of, well, like, you know, that woke moment to have to always be this way. And I think the ultimate goal when I advocate on behalf for the deaf community, it's really about elevating those voices. And I think one of the best ways to do it, like this interview we're doing here, this chat we're having, it's through storytelling and sharing those life experiences. And you create that empathy. And it's interesting because it's almost this courtship between this vulnerability of storytelling and the courage that you need to do it, that it kind of thrives on each other. It's a bit of a catch-22. You've just got to be brave to share the story. And with that, you become a bit braver and, you know, you share more stories and you get more stories. So I'll draw on three kind of bodies of advocacy work that I'm involved in. I think the most prominent piece is the work that I do with Hear For You, which is part of the Shepherd Centre, and it's mostly around mentoring. It's a social group of young adults who share life experiences around deafness with younger people who are going through that journey. You know, it's fostering that sense of belonging, which I think is one warm embrace. It's just really, really beautiful. And we're saying we're here for you and we see you, we understand you, and we're here to show you how to develop that strong voice. We won't do it for you. We can if you want us to, but let us show you how. And by seeing that there's an older deaf adult mentor to say that I've been there, done that, and you'll be okay, it's really that network that you come in contact with and everyone's got that same level of empathy and wanting to be that older version of someone they weren't when they were younger. So being visible around deafness has definitely made a difference for some of the young people that come through the program. And just to see the very big range of, you know, careers or uni courses that we're part of, or, you know, social circles that we can be part of, is a really good thing to showcase.
Absolutely.
And I see, yeah, the work that we do at Here For You is really, and I'll share a quote here that I've just got always on my desktop. And it's from the wonderful Mr. Rogers. If some of us are of that vintage that I am, you know about Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. And I quote here, he said, "There's a world of difference between insisting on someone doing something and establishing an atmosphere in which that person can grow into wanting to do it." And I feel like that, yeah, it really encapsulates advocacy and how it can be done. And it's not necessarily forcing those words, but letting them come to grow comfortable in their skin enough to want to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we actually have, as part of this series, have interviewed John and Nadine from Here For You to get their perspective. So this is certainly a group that we are very much behind and support as well in terms of
beautiful. Yeah, they're great. They're great people to chat to. Great human beings. Not despite their hearing difference, but because they are. We are. You know, it's important to see that.
And committed to the work, which I think is really important.
That's it. And the other hat I wear is, you know, how we advocate through the research that we do. So that's my researcher hat I'm swapping out now. And we, as researchers, we have clinicians and researchers. We have a huge responsibility to ensure that we're valuing the contributions that people with lived experience of deafness bring. You know, sharing that decision-making power with them means that the research will always be relevant, and that's where the impact grows, right? And it'll always be relevant when we design things with them in mind from the very start through to the end and everything in between. You know, it can be uncomfortable coming to that realization that we need to unlearn and unpack certain assumptions as researchers and clinicians and flip the script and let people with lived experience sit in that captain chair. So we're embedding a lot of community and consumer involvement in the work that we do at NAL and also within the PhD journey I'm part of. And, you know, some projects are a bit more flexible than others. Some of them have already started, they've got funding, and you just can't be a bit more flexible, but you can always build in that voice at any part of that research journey and never forget that. I think, you know, it's a plug that we needed for a long time. I think other countries have had more of a head start compared to Australia, but we are doing that more and more. There's more recognition around the value that consumers bring.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If we're researching on the population, then we need to know what they actually think about these things.
And absolutely.
It's research that's helpful to them.
Very, very true. Very true. And so the last hat that I wear in terms of advocacy is the parent hat, the parent of a young child who is hard of hearing. And that's since I joined a parent advocacy group as part of an NHMRC-funded project called Anchor. So I think Valerie Soong is the chief investigator on that project. And before then, and still, I'm a member of the Aussie Deaf Kids parent kind of peer support group, which has been an absolute game changer to find that tribe and feel, oh yeah, I know what you're saying. And we have some laughs over certain things that we kind of experience in different ways, but it's the same thread. And it's interesting to see how these separate parent-driven spaces grew out of this need, this desire to change things and envision better futures for our children. And it's always, advocacy is always from within. It's stronger when it's from within because we know what we want, right? And, you know, it's an absolute privilege to be part of these groups. They're very diverse but united. We're same but different in terms of all the skills and knowledge we bring in, and you know, it's at that local, national and almost international capacity that we're growing our voice, which is beautiful. Yeah.
It is, absolutely. And I think we've been touching on this a lot around why it's important to do this work, both as a parent, a researcher and a person yourself with lived experience. Was there any other reasons why you think this work's important?
I think it's more about recognising that you never do this alone. And you never start from zero. I think people have who come into this advocacy space before us, we're standing on their shoulders and we've got our hands linked. It's almost like the space, the scene has been set. We just need to kind of make it a bit more shiny and sparkly, right? And I know someone who I fangirl over a lot is Maggie Dent, who's an absolute pro at, you know, teenage health and parenting. And she mentioned that, you know, young people need lighthouses. And that's a beautiful analogy. They're role models who have trodden on those paths before you. And not to make it sound so heroic, but it's the everyday things, just achieving the everyday things is what makes advocacy seem so big, but it's actually the little things that we do. And just be very proud and tall about deafness. It doesn't come naturally, but it does happen. And growing comfortable in that skin, I think it's living that more authentic version of yourself. And that's why it's important to do advocacy, because it is that empowering. And even the work that I do now is built on the work that, you know, other great people like, you know, Ann Porter and all the people that work in early intervention spaces build for us. So I want young people to see us as like the whetstones, you know, that's why we're here, we're your lighthouses. And yeah, I think that's why it's important to have that visibility, even though I really, really am frightened of public speaking and presentations and conferences, but it's that visibility that would, yeah, that would really join those hearts together.
Absolutely. It's the reason why for this advocacy series, I've only spoken to people with lived experience, because we need to learn from you. I have a platform that I like to use and ensure that we are raising those voices and making sure that they're the influences that we all take on board. So thank you.
Oh, wonderful, Trudy. You've definitely got the right end of the stick. I think it's beautiful that you've carved out this space. Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you for being part of it. I wonder what advice you've got for other people in the community who are considering this work, who are seeing you as a lighthouse and wondering how they themselves could stand alongside you.
Great. At the moment, I'm a stumpy lighthouse. I've got my finger in too many pies. So I think definitely prioritize. I think start small. Don't do it for others. Do it for yourself first. And then you'll know how to do it for others. So definitely first bit of advice is believe in yourself. Yeah. And don't try and do everything at once. And that's the advice I give researchers as well. Like I remember at the conference last year in Tasmania, you know, but we've already started this. So how do I bring in parent advices? I'm like, in whatever way you can.
Yep.
Yeah, in very small ways. And I think at first you might not see the ripples you're causing, because the impact you deliver through your advocacy work or your involvement in research or any kind of advocacy work, you might not see it immediately, but it might be, the impact might be delivered further down the track, right? And so you're paving the way and we'll all eventually get there. And, you know, start slow, start small. That's the advice. And there is number two, I think the advice is there's no right or wrong way to advocate, in my opinion. It could only ever go wrong if you're not sincere about it or if the purpose isn't clear. And usually, always you can circumvent this by including and enabling voices, lived experience, to lead this space or co-lead at the very least and ask, what is it you want to change right now, right? And I think lastly, it is tiring, it is demanding, but so, so rewarding when you can shift the dial a little. We're not asking the mountains. It could be the very small anthill that you're doing and it will make a difference, right?
Well, absolutely.
And, yeah, and finding your tribe, and you don't have to do this alone. Advocacy can bring this sense of belonging when you have that united purpose. So start small, don't expect to see great rewards, and believe in yourself and reach out. I think those are the too long didn't read moments.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful way to summate this whole series that we've done around the advice given. And I guess even just remind people, it's your right to have, you know, to be living on the same basis as everybody else. And so even if you have to start from that fundamental, it's a right for me to ask this question or to ask for this resource or this support or this time or this conversation is really important too, that and that we're open to that. So I hope that everyone who's been listening over the last 10 weeks has benefited from the incredible lighthouses that I've spoken to. And if you've got any more questions about advocacy, I'm really happy to forward those to any of our speakers that you've been hearing from. So Jamie, thank you so much for bringing this home for us in such a beautiful way. We really value your time. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Trudy. And you're doing very wonderful work bringing us all together and creating this series, curating it so thoughtfully. And honestly, what's the worst that can happen? Ask, and if they say no, we'll try again, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. That's always the question. What is the worst that can happen? And that you have to talk to somebody else.
Exactly. Absolutely. But always practice self-care. Definitely that.
Always practice self-care. In that vein, if there's topics that you'd like us to discuss, or if you'd like to come and have a conversation with us on the podcast, I'd love to hear from you. So please do reach out. Thanks for being with us today, everyone. Thanks again, Jeremy. And we'll talk to you again soon, everyone.
Thank you.